Karen Armstrong studies and writes about religion, and since she travels a great deal for her work, she gets to talk to a variety of people on trains, planes, and taxi cabs. She says a lot of people she runs into have really negative opinions about religion, and they have no problems telling her about it. They complain that religion is at the heart of all political conflicts, the cause of centuries of war and hatred among the peoples. Why would anybody make religion their profession? It bothers her, of course, as it does me, because religion isn't the problem. Religion is not the cause of violence and war. People are the cause. People who seek power, people who corrupt the wisdom of the sages and turn religion into a hardened knot of doctrines used to control other people. Armstrong tries to defend religion by tracing the history of today's modern traditions all the way back to a period known as the Axial Age. From 900 to 200 BCE, four different regions of the world produced the religious and philosophical traditions that have transformed our modern day. From China rose Taoism and Confucianism. From India, Buddhism and Hinduism. From Israel, monotheism, which later gave rise to Islam and Christianity. And from the Greek rose a tradition of philosophical rationalism. Now, the traditions that were all in place, those religions that were all in place before this period that she's talking about, primarily practiced animal sacrifice. But all of the religions that came after, during this so-called Axial Age, put morality at the center of religious life. The only way that you could encounter God, Nirvana, Brahman, the Tao, was to live a compassionate life of love. To become fully human, then, according to nearly all of these ancient sages, you have to abandon greed, you have to abandon unkindness, and just practice love. That's it. Not just for all of those closest and the people that you like, your family, but also to strangers, to the entire world. No exceptions. Love everyone. It's no wonder, then, that practically every one of those traditions that evolved from the first Axial Age religions have some variety of the golden rule. From Confucianism, do not do to others what you do not want them to do to you. From Judaism, what is hateful to you, do not to your fellow man. From Islam, none of you truly believes until he wishes for his brother what he wishes for himself. And from the Christian Gospels, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. In the centuries since these words were first inscribed in the holy texts, the golden rule has been adopted by the secular world. It's now called the ethic of reciprocity. And the golden rule has now been reduced to a product of mass production. The words are imprinted on wall plaques and charm bracelets. Detached from the original body of wisdom of those sages, the golden rule becomes just another bumper sticker slogan. Separated from mystery and holiness, the golden rule falls short of the highest spiritual aspiration, which is love. Liberal theologian Paul Tillich gives us a beautiful image of this high spiritual aspiration. He writes, "For the other one and I and we together in this moment, in this place, are a unique, unrepeatable occasion. For the other one, and I and we, together in this moment, in this place, are a unique, unrepeatable occasion, calling for a unique, unrepeatable act of love. We need more of this kind of inspiration. With all that is broken in our human family, with all the ways in which we turn away from the suffering of our neighbors, in all the ways we treat the earth as if it was not connected to our very lives, we need more of this kind of awareness of the unity of all being. We need this kind of inspiration, one that is neither part of a rigid belief system, desperately clinging to old, outdated theologies, preaching fear and separation, nor one that rejects anything and everything that is remotely connected with God, spirituality, religion. We need something in between. People are so used to thinking that there are only two options, red state, blue state. Either superstitious, concretized belief that leads to religious war, or a complete absence of spirituality, trusting in only that which we can touch and see and measure, and of course relying on numero uno. It's hard for some people to imagine the vast in-between places. Unitarian Universalists join our progressive brothers and sisters of all faiths to hold that space in between. The space in between is free from doctrines that sustain false separation between peoples. It is free from outdated beliefs that no longer serve humanity. It is a place where we can turn to the wisdom of the sages. And those sages are calling us to a spiritual life where we can encounter God, Brahman, Allah, Nirvana, or the Tao, by living a life of compassion and love. Now, UUs have never been interested in an esoteric spirituality. What is said on Sunday must be relevant on Monday. The words that are spoken in worship have to make sense, and they have to match the deeds of our hands and our feet. Deeds, not creeds. It's a value that has been passed down to us for hundreds and hundreds of years. The 19th century universalist Hosea Ballou is known to have said of religion, "Can you reduce it to practice? If not, have none of it." The mission of WUU expresses this yearning for relevancy in our day-to-day lives. If you're not familiar with it, it has been beautifully set in calligraphy by Gail Henyon and is hanging out in our narthex. Our mission is in four parts, and it implies movement, continuous movement, and growth and action, as well as stillness and reflection. It recognizes both the primacy of community and the importance of the individual spiritual quest. The movement and action expressed in our mission are best represented actually as a circle. And I'm glad that the piece of paper that you did it on is a circle too. And let me show you what I mean. I'm going to do a little show and tell. Okay, part one of our mission describes this congregation as a group of people who are creating, always recreating, an inclusive community where all people are encouraged to find their own path to spiritual growth. An inclusive community, of people who are earnestly seeking and earnestly following their true path. Add to that the call to embody UU values in our relationships, both within this congregation and with everyone we meet in our daily lives. It's the way we live out our mission in the way we treat our neighbors, in the work that we choose, in the activities that we get involved in. It's called walking the talk. Now, the last two parts of the mission have to do with social justice. So that tells you something about the importance of social justice in our congregational life. The first part of this social justice mission is to promote religious, racial, and social harmony right here in Williamsburg. And then, the last part of our mission calls us to move beyond the limits of Williamsburg, where we take transformative action to achieve a sustainable and humane world. Now, here is the circle part. After we're out in the world doing all this social action, and after we're out in the world living out our values, we come back to the community. We come back to the community for spiritual reflection, reflecting on what we saw, heard, and experienced. And with this new insight, we ask ourselves, how do those experiences reinforce or challenge the beliefs, the values, the assumptions that I have been holding? It's also a time to rest and be nurtured, to thank each other and to bless each other. And then when we feel ready, when we feel well energized, we go back out in the world again and we follow that cycle again. Ever moving, ever changing, ever adapting our practices to new information. This movement is the essence of liberal religion, being always open to new revelation, the willingness to let go of old ideas when they no longer serve to lead us to a more compassionate and loving life. Another way to understand the circular movement of our mission is in the set of questions, what, so what, now what? The what is any experience that brings you closer, that brings our attention to the people and issues that are hidden or ignored in our society. The what is what you experience when you all go out to Old Town Medical to volunteer or work at Avalon, the food bank, Faith in Action, Hospice House. The what is what you experience when you go to an all-together brown bag discussion or watch a film in the environmental stewardship series. The so what is the practice of meaning making, and we do this in worship. We do this in covenant groups. We do this in small group reflection. It is the practice of theology, trying to give words to those experiences of profound connection. We ask ourselves, given this experience that I just had out there, what do I believe about the nature of human beings? What do I now believe about the nature of evil? Where do I find the presence of the divine? Next, we ask, now what? Now that we've had these experiences, reflected on them spiritually and theologically, now what are we called to do? What action are we called to take in the world? And so we do that, and then we come back here to the congregation, we reflect, and so on, and so on, and the circle goes round and round. 3 years ago, almost to this very day, Preston and I boarded a plane in Oakland, California, and came out here for a week-long visit as your ministerial candidates. While we were here, we led worship, we met with small groups of congregants, we went house shopping. We were very privileged to meet Ted Shaheen and Tom Pugh before they passed away later that year. During that week, we heard you say that you wanted to, quote, grow into maturity as a voice and a home for liberal religion in Williamsburg. We heard you say UUs have yet to fulfill our role in the community. In order to realize that vision, we felt that it was important first to build some internal structures and develop some shared spiritual practices. And so for the past several years, we've been putting a lot of attention on church governance. It's really boring, but important. And on personal spiritual growth. We're practicing now the holy arts of deep listening, of meditation, of study. We're forging deeper relationships with each other. We've done very good work together. And we have a ways to grow. We still have a ways to grow in learning how to communicate about the touchy, hard topics. We still have a ways to grow in reaching out to those who are on the periphery of our community. This further growth won't happen if we remain a closed community. As my colleague Scott Alexander once wrote, the congregation that primarily looks inward for discovery of meaning, wholeness, service, and spirituality, the one that doesn't move outside its walls to visibly live its religion in the wider community, will not experience growth, will not experience depth. One of the reasons for that is, as diverse as we are in certain ways, the 250 members of this congregation are primarily white, primarily college-educated, professionals, middle-class, politically liberal, and heterosexual. Not that there's anything wrong with any of those things. It's just that if we only look inward for our discovery of meaning, wholeness, and service, then that spiritual reflection that we're doing, the so what exercise, it's going to be limited. Now, if we lived in a town that was torn by strife, war, famine, gang violence, poverty, blatant oppression, it would be easy to know what our role in the community would be. We'd be out there. We'd be rendering first aid. We'd be feeding people every day. We would open our doors and people would be sleeping on the floor of our sanctuary. But poverty here is hidden, and racial discrimination subtle. Violent conflict and crime are infrequent. And so it takes a little more to move us outside. And what is it that will move us out into the world, traveling to unfamiliar neighborhoods, building relationships with people who are different from us, reaching out across theologies and sociologies? What moves us to share our UU values with the larger world? Well, when we get together like this on Sunday mornings to worship, or other times to study, to reflect, and to share our experiences of life, we are creating a vision of beloved community. Together, we build this vision and aspire to a world where the human family is awake to the truth that we are all connected to each other, to the earth, and to the ultimate mystery, the divine. But then we have to leave the sanctuary. And when we do, we see people operating under the delusion of separateness. creating false categories that have nothing to do with reality. The self, the other. Worthy, not worthy. Saved, damned. Loved, despised. We see rampant consumerism, disregard for the suffering of others, the cavalier destruction of our natural world. We see children in public schools being lured into Christian groups with pizza. We see people who hold religious, very, very strident religious beliefs, using their positions of power to advance harmful doctrine. There is a disconnect, then, between the things we envision together here and the things that we witness out in the world. This is the gap. The disconnect, that gap, is what moves us to action. It's what will move us beyond the limits of our comfort. It's what will move us to do things that we never thought we would have the courage to do. This is what is going to inspire us to fly. One Sunday, a preacher was speaking to her flock, and she said, "Brothers and sisters, there is great work to be done, great good to be had. But first, we've got to take that little step. We've got to walk together and not grow weary." "Amen," said the congregation. "Amen." "And then we've got to run. Got to run together and not grow faint." "Amen, amen," said the congregation. "And then we've got to sprout wings like angels and fly." "Amen, amen," said the congregation. "And then, in order to fly, we're going to need lots of money." Silence from the congregation. And one faint voice from the back row, "Then let's walk, preacher." Today, as you heard from Roger, today is the official beginning of our stewardship campaign. Starting today, we will hear from this congregation if you want to walk or if you want to fly. But I will tell you that your board and your executive team and your ministers absolutely want to fly and know that we can fly. 100% of us, every single one of us, have already put in our pledges for the next year, and I have no doubt that this congregation will step up and follow our lead. You have been so generous. You have been so generous in giving of your heart. You have been generous in opening yourselves up and being vulnerable to each other. You've been generous in giving of your time and talent and your financial resources. I have no doubt that we will be able to make our goals this year. I know that you will extend generosity to this congregation, and it will keep Unitarian Universalism alive and well and strong in Williamsburg. Will the congregation say amen?
Amen.